All right, here we go. We are back for a very special Friday episode of the D2D3 podcast. It is championship weekend, and I am thrilled to have Jack back joining me. Talk some D3 news, some D2. Going to set the table for the weekend, get all these championship conference games set up for you. We are coming to you from a Friday. It is different than the day that you would normally listen to us. We got big leagued by the D-Fly and Dixie podcast. Apparently, Mark Dixon had something to do last night, which if you were watching the Big Ten channel, you may have saw him. I guess that's a pretty valid reason for us to get bumped. But I actually love this spot because now we already have the full path for the weekend kind of planned out. We know exactly how those Wednesday and Thursday games panned out, so we can kind of dive into those matchups. Jack, how are you? How are you feeling?
Doing great. Doing great. Thanks for having me back. You know, big weekend coming up here with some big time championship lacrosse. So excited to talk some shop and get into it.
Yes, absolutely. Let's do this thing. Before we kind of dive into the weekend, let's start with some D3 news, which the biggest thing, I can't believe we actually have gone this long, 1 minute and it looks like 30 seconds almost into the podcast without talking about the biggest news to hit the Division III world all season, which is Coach Jancic retiring. And guess what, guys? I think that applications for the Gettysburg job may range in the thousands. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
It'll be, you know, really exciting to see who ends up there, but congratulations to Coach Jancic, who has had just an absolutely legendary career. He has been there for at least 34 years, I believe was what I read. And man, I just am kind of in awe at a career that could last that long and have impacted the number of people in our sport that he has. It's just incredible. So congratulations to Coach.
Yeah, absolutely. Congrats, Coach. I think too, his overall impact on the game, his coaching tree is incredible. If you look at that, a bunch of assistants out there, Coach Kudelka down at Lynchburg. So that's pretty incredible. And like you said, that's a pretty coveted spot that I think regardless of where people are at now, regardless of divisions, like you said, maybe in the thousands. That wasn't an overstatement by any means. So,
yeah, absolutely. And it's just an incredible feat. 34 years and just the number of student athletes that have come through that program that he has impacted is just absolutely phenomenal. And coaching is a profession that's kind of unlike any other. You deal with 18 to 22-year-old men for 4 years. Some of them come to you as, you know, mature as it gets, and some of them come to you needing a whole bunch of work. And, you know, over 34 years, I just can't imagine the number of instances and guys that he's been able to impact. It's just incredible. So congrats to Coach on an incredible career. Let's hit the next thing here on my list of D3 news, and that is the drop from Hartford. They have decided that they will be joining the Division III ranks and moving forward with that. It's something that I have official approval from my higher-ups to drop the word unprecedented. As I think back, I don't think that there's been something that's been this drastic of a drop. And the drops or changes usually occur the opposite, where teams will go from D3 to D2 or D2 to D1, like we even just saw with Merrimack. And Quinnipiac, Merrimack. So really exciting there to see how that kind of impacts the D3 world. And Jack, how do you feel about this being that it's kind of up in your region? Do you have any major thoughts here?
Yeah, I'm excited to kind of see what this program can do in Division III. It'll be awesome to have another team close by in the region. And I think Coach Martin's going to do a good job. He's been at Hartford for some time, and I think something to note too is he's no stranger to the D3 landscape, right? He was an All-American at Ithaca. He's coached at several different D3 schools. He was head coach at Oswego, interim head coach at RPI, assistant coach at NAS. So no stranger to the D3 landscape, and you know, I'm sure that transition will be smooth for those guys. So definitely always interesting when there's crossover between the divisions. So I'm looking forward to following that program and their progress.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. And, you know, it's just there's not a whole lot of information right now about it. We just kind of know that there was a vote and the vote passed, that they want to go ahead and move forward with it. And so from here, it's kind of a waiting game to see how the rest of it plays out. And then the next thing I want to hear on my list for D3 news is some of the regional rankings that were posted. There's some really interesting conclusions that you can kind of make there towards how you feel the bracket for the NCAA tournament is going to play out. Some interesting things up in the north, some more interesting things down in the south. Jack, what do you think about these? I knew you had some thoughts based on some of the northern rankings up there.
Yeah, so currently in that region two is where I think it gets really interesting, where you have some of those Liberty League teams with a couple Empire 8 mixed in there. So obviously you got RIT sitting at one. So St. Lawrence sitting at two, looking ahead to the champion, to the Liberty League championship this weekend. I think it appears that St. Lawrence should be safe. You never know. You never want to put it at your fate in the hands of the committee, but just from looking at afar, you got Ithaca sitting at four with Union at five. So it looks, unfortunately, like Union is buried due to that hiccup they had against Ithaca during the year. And then obviously there are other two losses coming to RIT that we'll get into. But it looks from this point that the path for Union, it's closed, and it's a real bummer because I think they're playing some of their better lacrosse at the end of the year. But look for, I think, RIT and St. Lawrence, the Liberty League could potentially be a multi-bid league, and we'll get into that a little bit later. And then obviously St. John Fisher, who's having a tremendous year, sitting at three in that region. So they win the Empire 8 this weekend, though. They'll get in.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the most compelling storyline, and I don't think this is really a hot take at all, but I think the most compelling storyline in Division III lacrosse right now is who ends up with the two bowl seeds. And to be clear, typically, and like we said, we're going to set the table for the weekend for you and kind of explain this a little bit. But typically in Division III lacrosse, you have more like seven or eight. And next year, I think it is eight bids of pool C bids. So like this being two bids, this being a two tournament pool C bid event is going to be just absolutely crazy. It's going to be a bloodbath for those two when you typically, you know, you have eight very strong teams getting in with those. So it'll be really interesting to see how it plays out. And then specifically in that region, because the next team behind St. Lawrence is St. John Fisher, who I would say is, you know, a head and shoulders favorite to win the Empire Eight. If that was a team that there may not be as much certainty around that, perhaps St. Lawrence isn't as locked in, or I should say the loser of RIT St. Lawrence. We are talking as if it is 100% destined that St. Lawrence is going to lose that game, which I don't 100% think is the case. But if they do end up losing that game, I think based on the fact that St. John's Fisher is the favorite in the Empire 8 right behind it, I think they're looking pretty good for that. And then down in the next region, in that third region, which kind of highlights more of the southern teams, kind of like the southern, I guess it's PA really in New Jersey, but it's kind of more southern, obviously, than those first two regions. You have Salisbury 1, Stevenson 2, York 3, which leads you to kind of similar spot with the MAC championship. So the loser of that MAC championship isn't necessarily going to be 100% out, I don't think. And so making some of these regional, I guess I would just say like sort of conclusions based on these rankings, it's not 100% foolproof, but it does kind of give a little bit of an idea of what the committee is thinking, how they're leaning, and what teams are in a little bit better shape if they are to end up losing their conference championship.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, it's going to be a really tough path for anyone if you don't win your conference tournament. So I think the easiest way, obviously, is just to, you know, now let it be in the committee's hand and control your own destiny and just win the dang thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So for the championship, we will have 28 pool A's, which those pool A bids are for you win your conference. You're one of those pool A teams. Your pool B, we only have one. Typically, it's two. We only have one, and it typically also goes to Cabrini, but the America East is officially one of the pool A teams this year, so we don't have to sweat out Cabrini just automatically wiping that pool B league. But I do think that it is already decided that it will go to Colorado College. I think they're head and shoulders the best team of the group that qualifies for pool B, which pool B is teams that play in conferences that win their conference, but their conference is not an automatic qualifying conference. And so there's a couple of those throughout the country. They all fight for that same pool B bid. The pool C bids are for those teams that we've kind of been discussing. You're at large, your team that is a strong candidate, that has a good SOS, that has a good RPI, that has a good rating, whatever you want to call it, good record, whatever you want to use, which this year it's basically the eye test. Whatever you want to use to justify that pool C is for those teams that don't win their conference but are good enough to get into the tournament. And so that's kind of the shakeup of the tournament. In Division II, it's a bit different. It's a lot smaller. Division II, it'll be a 10-team tournament, and that actually gets going really right around the corner. It's kind of sneaking up. That first round is right on the 14th, so that's coming up pretty quickly. But so Division III, I think we're going to have a whole lot more answers here over the next couple days, and then ultimately on Sunday night at 9 p.m. when we have the selection show. Or I guess it's following the Division I show, so it'll be a little bit later than that. But we'll have a whole bunch of clarity around the field come Sunday night with the selection show. Really excited for it. Really excited to see how it plays out. And I'll tell you what, if there's one job I don't envy right now, it's having to be the person that selects the two pool seats.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, it's harder than ever. And I mean, it, like you said, it's going to be a bloodbath for those two pool seats. So, you know, I think it's tough to predict it and call it right now, because so much is going to happen between now and Sunday. And it's real exciting because, you know, it's going to be a special weekend of lacrosse coming up. So,
all right, so let's go ahead and dive in here. First one, I'm going to start with one I don't think anybody was really expecting me to start with. My ex would love starting with this just because of some range up there. But I'm going to start with Keene State, who had not lost a game in conference since the title game in 2013. Shout out to Liam Murphy. Thank you for that tidbit. I love getting those tweets at me. That's like such a juicy tidbit right there that I otherwise would not have known. So thanks to Liam for that. Huge upset. Jack, I'm going to kick it to you. This one is up there. Tell me what you think of this Little East matchup.
Yeah. So obviously they've had a strong hold on the conference since 2013. I've always been, you know, the top dog in there. And this was a big program win for WestCon, I think. 11-10 win, keeping it close. And I think it talks a lot about how far this WestCon team has come. You look at their schedule. They played Keene State game one of the year and lost 17-5. Wow. So to be able to come back at the end of the year and avenge that, I think it's a big program win. Congrats to Coach Kavanaugh and that staff. As a Connecticut guy, I'm always pulling for him. So that's awesome to see. And big one coming up here for them against UMass Boston, who they're playing some good ball right now. And I think that it's going to be a real battle. And it'll be good to see some new blood in the NCAAs. You know, it's been Keene State, obviously, for the last several years. So it'll be good to see someone else representing the Little East.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree. And so UMass Boston entered as the one seed, and these two teams have seen each other in a crazy high-scoring affair that it was 19-15 early in the year back in April. So it'll be, I'd expect it to be another high-scoring affair this time. I don't think that you go from scoring 19 to 15 on each other to scoring, you know, less than 10. So it'll be interesting to see. If you're an offensive person like myself, should be entertaining. So I'm definitely looking into locking into that one and seeing who kind of pulls that one out. And like you said, it'll be really cool to get some new blood in the tournament. And so shout out to WestCon and that staff. Like you said, that was definitely hitting the nail on the head. So let's shift. I'll take this next one. We're going to go talk about the ODAC a little bit. So we had a huge upset in the ODAC. I don't know that we did a good enough job of making this a big deal, or I guess I'm calling myself out. But Bridgewater taking down Roanoke is huge upset in the historical sense. Kind of like we were talking about earlier with Teen State. Like, that's a huge historical upset. You know, maybe the teams were a little bit even this year. I don't know. This year is a little bit weird. But in the historical sense, massive, right? So shout out to Bridgewater. And then they came out hot against WNL last night too. They kind of had them on the ropes. It was a really good first quarter. And then WNL kind of just stranglehold. Like, they just were able to dominate possession to the point where it was like when Bridgewater had the ball, they felt like they needed to score too quickly, you know, and that kind of over the course of the game takes its toll.
Absolutely.
And so that was a good one though. And shout out to them for getting there. You have to have that first marquee win before you can go and log your second. Right. So shout out to them. They're on their way. Really cool. And they do a great job at the X too. It's a really good, really, really good unit. And it's not just their face-off guys. Their wings do a really good job of keeping guys off and kind of reading the situation. So really cool, really excited for Bridgewater down in the ODAC. The other semi that we had last night was Lynchburg-Hampton-Sydney. I got to catch just about every second of it. I went to the bathroom once, so I missed like 3 goals because Lynchburg was on a roll. Man, they just got hot, and it was everything that could go their way was going their way. Everything from faceoff guys scoring to goalies making in tight saves. It was a good game. You know, it was a good game for a while. It was entertaining, but Lynchburg just kind of overwhelmed them and kind of just over the course of the game asserted themselves. So we're set up for a WNL Lynchburg championship, which I know we hit earlier in the year. This matchup has kind of gone more towards WNL in the last few years. So it'll be really interesting to see how this one plays out. They've split so far this year. Lynchburg has been ranked nationally higher than both Hampton-Sydney and WNL all year. I think they are the better team, but it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. It's one of these rivalries where it's like the better team does not always win. So absolutely, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. You had any thoughts on this one down in the South?
Yeah, like you said, you could toss records out the window when these guys get together. And I think we'll get into it a little bit later, but this could definitely be a scenario where we see the multi-bid for a league coming to play, say WNL wins this one. So yeah, definitely something we're going to get into, and I'm looking forward to watching that one this season. I think both teams are playing great right now.
All right, we are jumping back to the new MAC. I'm going to kick this one up to you, but before I do, I want to let the people know Springfield has won the last 12 in a row and 13 of the last 14. So again, we get new blood, which is thrilling for the tournament. It'll be either Babson or Coast Guard who entered the tournament as the 1 and 2 seeds. They actually both beat Springfield as well. And I think this is going to be a bloodbath of a game. Both teams are playing good lacrosse right now. Both teams have some skill. Both teams have some talent. Both teams are going to be able to make adjustments. They haven't played each other yet this year, so it'll be interesting to see you know, how they kind of come in and scout this game. There haven't been many games played for either team, so it's really interesting how each coaching staff will kind of decide to go with that. But really interested in this. Jack, what do you think of the new MAC championship game?
Yeah, like you said, definitely exciting to see some new blood in there. Springfield and Coach Bugby and his staff has always done a tremendous job. So, but it's always cool to see some of those other teams. And like you said, both are playing really good ball right now. Both teams are coming into the championship undefeated. I know we touched on how they haven't played a lot, but both undefeated, and it's actually interesting. They were supposed to play during the year, and it was one of the games that got canceled.
Yes,
for both schools, and it was. It appears, at least on Babson's schedule, that because they had another game scheduled, and they were able to make that up. But this was the one game they weren't able to make up. So
yes,
here they are, you know, bait kind of putting them on this path to meet in the new MAC championship. So I'm excited for this one, and excited to see someone else represent the new MAC in the NCAAs going forward this year.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And if I make you pick, I'm gonna make you take a pick on the spot between Babson and Coast Guard. Who do you think wins this one? Who takes that lead?
I think on the spot, I'm going my gut here. I'm going with a big statement program win for Coast Guard. I think they're, you know, they're well coached. They play a tough brand of lacrosse. And it could go either way, but if you're going to make me do it on the spot, I'll go with Coast Guard. Maybe some Connecticut bias there, but going with them.
All right. I think I'm going to take Babson. I think Babson's interesting this year. They've been scoring some goals. So in this year,
they can put up numbers.
Yeah, they've been scoring some goals, and it's not just one guy. So I mean, it's weird because I'm going to say the point total, like their leading scorer only has 14 points, but that's four games in. But after that, it gets pretty evened out. So I think Babson's one of these teams this year that is going to be hard. Like we said, there's not much you can do to really prepare at this point with just the four games. And having a team where you're a bit even and it just makes you harder to prepare for when you don't have to when the other team can't just kind of key in on one guy and kind of make things tough for him and you can get even scoring out. I think it's interesting. So I think I'm going to take Babson in that one, although Coast Guard and their left-handed attackman and Caleb Holdridge has my heart. So either way, it's a win for me, I guess.
Should be some good lacrosse either way. So if you're a fan, I don't think you'll be disappointed with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then let's move to another one. We'll stay up there, but I'm not going to make Jack say what we're all thinking, and that's that Tufts is going to bang home like 25 goals and the NESCAC is going to be a one big league for the first time in like maybe ever. I don't know. I honestly don't. It might be the first time ever that they are a one big league. It's normally they get like three or four. Sometimes they get like three or four to eight. And it, I mean, it's crazy. And I think this is going to be the first time they end up a one big league. The only way it doesn't happen is if Tufts decides that they don't want that to be the narrative. So they lose on purpose. And then they get the at-large. But if they do that, we should find them a Pool C bid.
Yeah, there would be, I think, a total NESCAC boycott then if that were to happen. But, I mean, Tufts is having a terrific year. But I think the thing about Williams that's been consistent, you know, whether they've had an all-star cast or not, is Coach McCormick up there, he finds ways to get his teams motivated and ready to play. So I wouldn't be shocked. They come hard flying out of the gate and keep this thing close early. The one thing I will say is they do have a shorter roster, a shorter bench than they typically do. So it's going to be, I think, tough to kind of keep up with the pressure that Tufts puts on people. It's been tough for everyone, and we've seen it a few times this year where the wheels fall off for teams because of that. We saw it happen against Dartmouth in the Wesleyan game. It's tough to play with a shorter bench against a team who plays at such a high tempo and puts that much pressure on their opponents.
Absolutely. Definitely. Cool. All right. Well, let's go ahead. We'll bounce down. We'll hit the Centennial. F&M is in. They officially won last night as they dropped a 20-piece on Dickinson. And Luke Keating, I think, is someone who right now we talk about seniors and guys towards the end of their career when they kind of get on a roll, they get playing with some confidence. And he's a guy right now that his game is kind of evolving before our eyes. My criticism of him for the last couple of years has been his willingness to just kind of hang out at X, right? Like I like my X attackman to be able to push the backside and like get up above GLE and put some pressure on defenses. Whereas in years past, he's kind of just sat back there and been a feeder. And part of it is because he had the best left-handed shooter in Division III lacrosse over there on the left wing. So he was just asked to catch the ball, throw it to Kevin, and let him go. But this year, he's kind of developed or at least shown or displayed, whatever you want to use, that ability to lower his shoulder, get into guys at GLE. And someone asked me why I think it was. And I honestly just think it's because he's playing like a senior. He's playing like a senior who doesn't want – his career to end and wants this thing to last as long as possible. So he's going to do whatever he can to do so. So that's pretty commendable. I think that's really cool. I think the Centennial is officially a one bid league. I think that the regional rankings kind of revealed that as you go through and kind of look for where Gettysburg falls. I just don't see it happening for him this year, which in Coach Jancic's last year is a little bit unfortunate. I'd like to see them have gotten in and then at least had a chance at making a run. And maybe they will, you know, maybe the committee decides that I don't know what I'm talking about, or maybe they decide to just give Coach Jancic the benefit of the doubt and get him in anyways, which I'm all for. So we'll see what happens there, but I don't see it exactly playing out that way. What about you, Jack? You have any thoughts on the Centennial? I know you like F&M and you think they're playing some good ball. I know you also like Luke and his game.
Yeah, no, I think like, we kind of touched on earlier, it's been pretty impressive to see his evolution as a player. Just looking back as a freshman, right? Just kind of have it pulled up here. He had 55 goals and only 17 assists to those 55 goals. And now the bulk of his points are coming from his assist totals. And I think a big part of that is teams, right? They're just going to naturally, they're going to try to stop and defend the knowns. And probably on the scouting report, right, he's got a bullseye on his back. And now he's able to get other teammates involved, where maybe in the past he was more of a just kind of a, like you said, savvy, right place, right time, goal scoring attackman. He's now kind of taking that next step where he knows what he can create for himself and he can get others involved. And he's definitely got a strong supporting cast. We talked about that earlier. Several stretch shooters who compliment him well. And I'm excited to see this F&M team make a run.
Yeah. And in years past, I've also criticized this team for their defense, and they have been locked in on defense. They've been, if I'm going to come on and criticize you, I got to give you credit and praise you when it's the opposite as well. And that defense has been locked in. They've done a really good job maintaining covers. And one thing that I think that they do, perhaps the best job I've seen this year, is showing the Dodgers to get Dodgers to kind of bail and become feeders and then just going back without getting stuck in no man's land. So it's hard to do that. It's hard to kind of show to the Dodgers and then also be buttoned up without ever actually touching the Dodger as the slot guy. And they do a really good job of kind of living in that land and covering up for him in that like 3 second span where the hot guy may be kind of stepping out and starting to go and then boom, get back as soon as he realizes that the Dodger saw the slide coming and then decided to kind of bail. So they do a really good job on that show and no go. So credit to that defense and those guys for kind of adjusting and just getting better on that side of the ball. Cool. All right, let's hit Landmark Conference with E-Town and Catholic coming up. E-Town beat my guy Coach Hoff in Scranton in their semis to get there. Catholic has kind of been the front runner in this league for this season. It's an interesting game. It's two first-year head coaches in the Landmark Championship, which is interesting. But the coolest thing about the Landmark this year, in my opinion, is Coach of the Year, Coach Hoff at Scranton. Can you imagine your dad? So you've known your dad for how long now? How old are you?
21. So 21 right, years.
So you've known your dad for 21 years. In that 21 years, can you imagine him coaching an entire season by himself at Wesleyan? No assistant coaches.
Absolutely not. And it's funny you say that, because I think at Wesleyan we have the biggest coaching staff. I think we have at a minimum 8 coaches.
Yeah, well, Salisbury's giving you a run for your money.
It's, yeah. I would say either us or them.
Yeah, they got an army down there on the sideline.
Well, it was interesting when we met them in the national championship in 2018, and the coaches were shaking hands before the game.
Yeah, you guys could have had a Royal Rumble in the circle.
Exactly,
or something.
exactly. Credit to Coach Hoft. I mean, that's incredible. There's so much going on during the game, and to be able to manage and handle all.
He's running the box. He's calling the offense. He's calling the defense. He's calling timeouts. He's managing the entire thing by himself. It's pretty incredible. And then the other thing that's cool about it is the rest of the coaches, because these awards are voted on by the coaches of the conference, like all of them. And so it's cool that the rest of the coaches in the conference recognize that and were like, man, that guy is in full beast mode just every single day of his life, which is, you know, really cool. Really commendable.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I wouldn't just be saying this if I didn't play for Coach Hoff. I would say it either way.
There you go. You're getting your check in the mail now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, darn right. All right, let's go to my other coach that I played for in Coach Childs with York and Stevenson down in the MAC. We got a big one there. And for people that don't really realize, the MAC is split up into two sections. So you have your Commonwealth section and your Freedom section. Both get automatic qualifying bids. So Stevens and Misericordia make up the Freedom Championship. That'll be for an AQ. I'd be shocked if Stevens doesn't end up with it. It would take a major upset. And then on the other side, you have York and Stevenson, who right now the regional rankings have them as 2 and 3 behind Salisbury in that region. And so I think if they go ahead and I think whoever loses this game still has a chance. I think if York wins it, Stevenson still has a chance. I think if Stevenson wins it, York, even with 2 losses, both to Stevenson, because Stevenson is higher in the region, it doesn't hurt as much. I think they still have a chance. They're going to be sweating it out. Don't get me wrong. They're going to be sweating it out. And the rest of their strength of schedule after that isn't that great. Which stinks. And part of that is because the MAC wasn't able to go play anybody else. Because if Eastern was able to go play other teams, they would have a good record. Eastern is a good team. Eastern's a very good team. They would have had that would be 2 quality wins for both Stevenson and York over Eastern in those instances. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. 7 o'clock under the lights. It's one of these games that it's like both sides are just salivating to get to this game and get it going again. It's really going to be a fun one. I would classify it as appointment television. Of all the games this weekend, of all the divisions, I think this is one, if you're just a lacrosse fan, you got to catch. No bias.
Absolutely. Absolutely. As a North guy, I'll back you on that.
Awesome. And you can back me up on the Stevenson atmosphere as Wesleyan came down and did some of those Mustang classics. It's an atmosphere that in Division III lacrosse is kind of rare.
It's pretty incredible. No, it's funny because I played my first couple years at Loyola, and I'd compare – it's like a mini Ridley is how I'd compare it.
They are in structure very similar. You're right. You're totally right. Definitely. Cool. All right. Well, let's go back up to you. Let's go hit the Liberty League. RIT St. Lawrence in the championship. These teams have already met. RIT won it the first time. St. Lawrence, do they have a chance of winning it this time? What do you think, Jack?
Absolutely. I think, like, in this league, it's any given day, like we've said before. And, you know, I think RIT is coming off one where they've kind of had to claw back. And I think they haven't really been faced with a ton of adversity all year. So it was good to see RIT kind of get punched in the mouth and see how they could respond against a tough Union team who I thought came in with a really good game plan, played them tough. And then St. Lawrence kind of with a statement like win, like we're here for business. We're here to get to Saturday, win over Ithaca. I think they're playing motivated lacrosse right now. And it wouldn't shock me if they come away here against RIT with a win. And like we said too, this can certainly be a multi-bid league, regardless of who wins on Saturday. So any thoughts to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if St. Lawrence wins it, it's absolutely a two-bid league. I think if they don't, just based on the regional rankings and kind of making some conclusions from that, I think St. Lawrence has a really good shot still. It's just hard to go ahead and like jump out on a limb and totally predict it, but I think that they do. I think they're in good shape. My question is, can you beat RIT playing as much zone as St. Lawrence likes to play?
it's challenging, and I've seen it firsthand with the Wesleyan group, right? That's what Wesleyan's known for. Their bread and butter is the zone, and that's what they did. They were able to do in 2018, but it's certainly not an easy thing. You know, zone busters, right? They have plenty of those guys. And I think the thing you can't do against RIT especially is you can't foul. You can't go man down. Those guys, they move the ball so well. A ton of Canadian players with a box background. And I think the one thing that's kind of not maybe overlooked about those Canadian box players, well, everyone says how incredible hands they have and how they can handle everything. Well, I think the main reason for that is they're incredible passers, right? They could put balls on ears in tight spaces. And good passers make good shooters. And I think these guys are as good as it gets when it comes to moving the rock. So it should be interesting to see how St. Lawrence approaches this one. But, you know, RIT has been able to – they've cracked zones. They've cracked – man, I don't think it matters too much what teams are trying to do to them. That's just a really good offense that Coach Kuhn has this year. So excited for this one. Any given day.
Absolutely. So. And you hit the nail on the head. You can't foul them. Union showed us that, right?
Right. I think Union, that's been their Achilles heel all year. I think they're actually one of the most penalized teams in the country. So that was, you know, that was a point of emphasis coming into the game, into the semifinal game for them. And RIT was able to take advantage of that. They made them pay scoring. I think it was like 4 out of 6 or 4 out of 7 extra man on their extra man opportunities, and that's 4 out of their 11 goals,
right?
Total. So can't do that because, you know, the ball is going to end up in the back of the net,
right? And one of them was pretty drastic, wasn't it? There was like a 3-minute stick penalty in there, right?
Yeah. So, I believe there was at it was the second quarter, coming out of a timeout when it was either Union was up by one or the game was tied up. Coming out of a timeout, there was an illegal stick call, 3-minute locked in, which, as anyone knows, that's super deflating for any team. Because even if you're not taking advantage and scoring, that's 3 minutes your man. You can't really generate offense, right? And that's 3 minutes you're defensively, you're on your heels. So I really feel like that was kind of the point in the game where momentum swung RIT's way, where Union kind of came out flying out of the gates, jumped on them early. I think that was kind of the turning point in the game where RIT was able to get some momentum back and kind of get their mojo going. Yeah. So,
and at this point, with so many close games over the last few years between Union and RIT, like, one of these games are bound to drop their way. But you got to think that there's some sort of like inferiority complex starting to creep into the back of their head every single time. It's like, oh, we got a 3-goal lead, and then RIT scores a goal, and they're just like, oh god, you know, like, is this the time where they're going to come back and tie it, and then, you know, take a lead with 5 seconds left again, or like, are we going to actually be able to hold on to it this time?
I will say too, I mean, as well and as impressed as I was with Union, and I thought they had a great game plan, it's probably never going to cut it scoring single digits against them.
Yeah.
Right. It's tough to win games against offense. The offense is like RIT and Tufts. If you're scoring single digits, I think the Union defense was tremendous. Athletically, I thought they matched up well. And I would look for St. Lawrence. Maybe they look at that a little bit.
Yep.
And maybe they feel as if they could athletically, they can match up. Maybe they'll come out in the man. Who knows? But should be an awesome game regardless. If you're a lacrosse fan, definitely check this one out. Two great teams, great coaches. It should make for an awesome championship game in the Liberty League.
Absolutely. Definitely. All right, let's bounce down back my way. We'll go to the C2C conference with Salisbury CNU. This one's tough. I think Salisbury takes it again. I like CNU's makeup. I like their team. I like their game. I like their coaching staff. I just don't think that they're there athletically yet to be able to compete with them, to be able to win the 50-50s that you need, to be able to keep their midfielders from getting to the middle of the field, like all that type of stuff that you need just your guys to be a little bit faster, stronger than what they currently are, to be able to keep them from getting those things. I think they're right there, but until that happens, I'm just not sure. It'll be interesting to see. I know that Salisbury in the past likes to try and shoot their way out of zones. CNU likes to zone. If there's a situation where Salisbury is not hitting on those shots, they can't find cutters in the middle, like maybe they get an upset here. We've had this exact conversation, I think, like three times now, at least two previous times where I'm like, oh, I don't think so. They're not quite as athletic. Salisbury's really good. And I think that we kind of just see it play out, unfold that way for a third time here in front of our eyes. The thing about CNU, though, they're really interesting. And we've been talking about the two bids basically this whole time. CNU is really interesting for that reason because they're a little bit lower in the regional rankings. I think if they lose this game, they basically are done. I think it would take a like serious sway in the committee to let a 5-loss team in. The thing about it is if they were a 4-loss team and one of those losses was to Lynchburg, who they also split with, which therefore kind of like cancel out, and then the other three are 3 losses to a legit Salisbury team, maybe they have an argument. But then when you throw the Colorado College loss on top of it, it's basically a killer. I just don't see a situation in which they let a 5-loss team in. So if CNU gets in, it's because either two things. One, the committee goes back. Like they lose to Salisbury and the committee goes back and sees that CNU – like one of the leagues that's a high favorite to get a 2 bids is the ODAC. But CNU is the exact argument against the ODAC getting it, while CNU also might not get it, because CNU has beaten the top 3 seeds in that conference. They beat Hampton Sydney, they beat WNL, they beat Lynchburg. Well, they split with Lynchburg, but they beat them once. And so literally, they are themselves the argument against the ODAC getting 2 bids. I guess it's just one more reason why I don't envy being the committee and having to choose who gets these pool seats. But I think ultimately the one that broke that broke their back was losing to Colorado College.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I think you hit it all around the head there. Obviously 2 great teams to get them together. And I think Coach Thompson is building something unique and special over there at Christopher Newport and really building that thing up. And, this is kind of the win they're looking for. That's going to take and elevate, their program to the next level. So, you know, they're certainly going to give it their best shot. And, they're not going to lay down for Salisbury. And it's nice to see too. It's, it makes the league – it's now going to make the league at the end of the year competitive for these guys. So these two will be the 2 top dogs in the conference for years to come, and it's going to be interesting to keep an eye on where both programs and the directions they go over the next several years in the league.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. All right, well, let's go ahead. We'll dive into a little bit of D2 here. I think that we kind of did a really good job of setting the table for the D3 tournament conference championship games that are coming up this weekend. There's obviously more. We can't take the time to talk through every single one of them. I think those are the big ones. Those are the ones that kind of will set the real table for the tournament and kind of be the higher seeds, the people that we really want to watch as we continue to go forward with this. So in D2, let's go ahead and dive in to this weekend's matchups. This is a huge one. This is one that is like, again, I talked about appointment television earlier. This is appointment television. Lemoyne and St. A's, two undefeated teams. It's a clash of Titans. And I'm jacked up for this one. You know, Lemoyne just beat Adelphi again. They beat him twice this year. They beat him in overtime earlier. And so, I mean, I think they've clearly asserted themselves as the better team on that group. Adelphi is quite a team as well. They're really strong and are every year. And St. A's, I think, is also, you know, historically very good. But this year they're up and they're feeling themselves and they're ready to go. Their only loss on the season is to Dartmouth, which, like, okay, who cares? Like, yeah. Who cares? They lost to Dartmouth. And then they just beat a hot pace team who was fresh off of an upset against Bentley. So they're feeling themselves. They're 12-0. They're really feeling good. And this game's going to be huge. This game's going to be really, really fun to watch. Jack, what do you think of this one?
Yeah, I'm excited to see, really looking forward to seeing how St. A's handles this. I always feel like Lemoyne is kind of the barometer, the measuring stick of success in D2 lacrosse. So, you know, two undefeated teams getting together, and it should be awesome. I'm really excited and looking forward to seeing how St. A's is going to handle it, like I said, and they can get that big program win. And because make no bones about it, Lemoyne has been the top dog in the NE10 historically. Obviously, you have teams like Merrimack over the Latin post who have moved on, who have also been great in that conference. But if you look at an overview of the whole overall success of the NE10, and especially on the national scene, Lemoyne is that team. So for St. A's to get this one, it would be huge. So definitely one I'm looking forward to and definitely one I'm excited about.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. And tell you what, I made you pick earlier. I'll take my pick here, and I'm going to take St. A's to beat them. I think they're more tested. I think they're a little bit more I just think that they have the mojo that it takes right now. Lemoyne has had some closer games and some instances where I thought that they should be winning games by larger. In fact, at one point I had in one of these outlines written out, like, do we need to worry about Lemoyne just based on the fact that they weren't crushing teams that I felt like they should have been. And so I'm feeling St. A's. I think that they're going to be the team that kind of emerges from this one. And I'll go out on that limb and say it publicly. How about that?
All right, there you go. Yeah, I think I'm not gonna go against you there. I think that's a pretty compelling argument. And I think St. A's gets this one too. And, you know, I think it'd be cool to see some new blood in the tournament. St. A's make a splash in the national tournament. So we'll see. I'm excited for this one. Definitely one I'm gonna tune into.
Absolutely. All right, let's go, St. A's. Don't let us down. Jack and Dan have your back. You have to have ours now.
There we go.
All right, Tampa and Lynn down for the SSC. This will be another good one. I see Tampa taking it. Tampa is another team that I feel like just hasn't quite been as tested as they typically would be in this year. I don't think that pays dividends in this game, but it may come to pay dividends come NCAA tournament time, which, like we said, that Division II tournament is a little bit of different structure. It's a bit smaller. It's been six teams. It's been 12 teams. It's been, it's varied a little bit. I think typically in normal years, we're at 12. This year, we're at 10. And so it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. It's a bit smaller, like we said. And it's just going to happen really quick. And it actually starts just like this. We're a couple days away from the first round, which is on the 14th. And in a 10-team tournament, like, especially this year, I feel like anybody could win it. I really do.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, yeah, you hit it right there. And I think regardless of the decision, in both all three tournaments across the board, like, if there's a year that they're up, right, it's this year, right, with teams how they're going to handle the COVID stuff and who could be healthy at the right times and just the whole format of the tournament. It's going to create for one of the more intriguing tournaments we've seen, because there's just so many external factors that are are going to impact how it all plays out. So definitely one I'm looking forward to as a lacrosse fan, and going to keep a close eye on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, that will do it for this edition of the D2, D3 podcast. Jack and I are super excited for this slate this weekend. And guess what? Playoff lacrosse and desperate seniors make for the most absolute electric games and electric performances. If you don't believe me, go back and watch the 2019 Cabrini team. It's electric. It's the right group of seniors. They get hot. I don't know if that happens this year, but man, am I excited to see how it plays out. So go home, set your calendar straight, get everything you need to do done early in the mornings this weekend so you can enjoy these games like Jack and I will. All right, that'll do it. Find me at Twitter at dkaplan46. Find Jack at
jackraba24.
All right, find us. Let us know your thoughts on these weekends and enjoy it. Won't be long till summer comes. Now that the boys are here again.